Well, welcome back to the Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs. The SACPA is now in its 40th year, and it meets at noon every Thursday at the lower level of the Keg on Mayor McGrath Drive. We have excellent speakers every week presenting topics of public concern. So come along. Everyone is welcome. Now to the audience questions. But as they proceed, and I'm pleased to see we have a lineup there already, as the audience questions proceed, we'll be passing the pail. Any contributions that you make to SACPA is welcome. But I'd remind you all that paper makes less noise when the pail comes around than silver, and you'll all be heard better. Now please remember, one question each, questioners, and please keep them as short as you can.
Thanks, Trevor.
Okay.
My question is going to be short. I've asked it before in other circles. I'm wanting to have an answer from each party representative of what their stand is on the rape of Northern Canada or uranium, and why we should be letting France have control of it.
So your question deals with uranium.
Uranium is being mined, and France has control of it and can sell it to anybody she wishes around the world.
Okay, France is controlling world uranium, and why should that be, and should we be doing anything about it? Who would like to go first on that question? Mr. Casson, was that yes?
Yes, I'm afraid I don't have a direct answer on the issue of France controlling the uranium in Canada. That's something I'm going to have to look into, and I can get back to you on that. However, the whole issue of the North and our sovereignty and our ability to control and to possess it and to assure that it is ours is an issue that I think is of paramount importance to all of us. But I do apologize on the issue of uranium in France. I'm not aware of that, sir, and I'll have to get some more work done on it and get back to you on it.
And I think we'll get the questioner to clarify his question. Were you saying that France is controlling Canada's uranium, or were you saying that France has control of the uranium market worldwide?
She has control of the cheapest mining of uranium, which is in northern Saskatchewan. And if you wish to be brought up on the subject, you should read Jim Harding's book on the Canada's deadly secret.
Yes, thank you. We had a SACPA session on that. Now, who'd like to address that question? Mark Sandilands.
I'm probably one of the few people in this room who has actually seen uranium mines in northern Saskatchewan. When I was 16, I had a summer job working on Lake Athabasca, and it was a fish camp. We would go over to Gunner Mines and watch movies. The fish camp didn't have much money at all, but the Gunner Mines had lots of money. Camco is the company that was a privatized company. It was a publicly own corporation, but the Grant Devine government, I think, in Saskatchewan privatized it, and that's one thing. The very poor control over the privatization and the foreign investment in Canadian companies. So the French company, it starts with A, I think it's Arista or Arriva or something like that, has bought out the controlling share of Camco, so they actually control the uranium mining. Now, uranium mining is dangerous, both for the workers there and for the people who live in the area because of the tailings ponds that are radioactive. It's very, very messy, and I think the best thing to do is leave it in the ground and find some other way for finding our energy. I've read Jim Harding's book, and it is alarming. So we need to... is my time up?
Yeah, but finish the sentence.
We need to take a very close look at an independent body. The way the Harper government dealt with the business at Chalk River was appalling, and I think that's a whole other issue as well. But uranium, to my mind, atomic energy is not the way to go, for the main reason that the waste of matter in the mining of it, and at the other end, when they're done with it, the waste from uranium from atomic energy nuclear power stations has not been solved. And
thank you, Mr. Sanders. Yeah, Mr. Cormican.
Again, I think Mr. Dick is right there, because and Mr. Sanderlands has put a little light on it as well about France. France has most of the reactors in the world, to my understanding. However, they were at, well, yeah, territorial-wise, but that aside, our liberal plan hopes to minimize the use of other than passive or encouraging passive electricity, say from solar, from geothermal. We have a plan. Part of our plan is to help homes retrofit, businesses retrofit, and green up. And
what about nuclear power? The question is about uranium and nuclear power.
Well, I think we're kind of stuck with it for a while. All we can do is minimize and work away from it.
Okay.
At the age.
Thanks very much, Mr. Kapp.
Well, if the issue is the French can make the profits from doing the work, well, that's free enterprise. But as to the resource itself, it is Canada's resource, and we should retain control over it. Further issue is uranium is a fissionable material. It can be used to produce nuclear weapons. And we don't want to contribute to more rogue states around the world developing nuclear weapons in their petty disputes with one another or against us. What we need to do is make sure that this mineral is only used for peaceful purposes, and at this time it's probably best to retain the tightest possible control over who we send it to, and best to keep it at home and find ways to mine it safely and hold the miners completely responsible for the environment in which they do it, to make sure they completely keep it clean and contained.
Thank you. Okay, next question, please.
Now, the many issues that I would like to ask questions about, I have to select one or two and frame a question.
And could you speak into the mic, please?
I'm trying hard. It's only about an inch.
That's much better.
Is that better? Okay. The two issues that I'm concerned about most are the environment. No matter what I've heard to date, I haven't heard anything that will bring us to the Kyoto Accord in the near future, and I'm worried about whether or not there will in fact be any world for my grandchildren. The second issue is the state of Medicare in this country. One of the excuses for privatization used is that...
Could we have one question, please?
And I'm coming to the question, if you just give me a minute, Trevor.
I thought we had the question on Kyoto.
I have a question about these two issues.
Yeah, well, we're going to limit it to one question each.
This one,
please.
Let me get to it. I'll be there.
Okay, go ahead with your question then.
One of the reasons for this so-called unsustainability of Medicare is the fact that the federal contribution has been reduced from 50% when it was instituted to 13% now. My question is, to Mr. Sanderlands, what does the New Democratic Party intend to do about both of these issues?
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Sanderlands, the question deals with Medicare. And you've got 2 minutes on that one.
Okay. Actually, the New Democrats have done something about Kyoto. Unfortunately, it's been blocked by the Harper Conservatives. Last June, Canada's Parliament passed a bill, C-377, been nicknamed the Kyoto Plus Bill. It received majority support, and it laid out a plan for reducing the greenhouse gas emissions of Canadians to 20% of what they were in 1990, the benchmark year for Kyoto, not 2006 that the Harper government is using with their puny attempts. Unfortunately, and so with 80% reduction, with five-year benchmarks, with a process to check up every 5 years, so it is laid out and it's recognized as a way of dealing with Kyoto. Unfortunately, even though he swore that the following the will of Parliament is the moral duty of the Prime Minister, our Prime Minister did not take that to the Governor General for ratification. So that's one thing we've done. With respect to Medicare, we would fund Medicare back to appropriate levels and prevent the privatization of health care that the Liberals failed to do and the Conservatives are still failing to do.
Who wants to jump in on that? Mr. Kapp.
Well, the regarding the greenhouse gases, countries like Canada are supposed to reduce their emissions by an average of 5% below their 1990 levels. We are presently up 24% above those levels. Now, in order to meet that scenario, we'll need to purchase carbon credits from other countries, shipping tens of billions of dollars out of the Canadian economy.
Our plan doesn't involve that.
With no reduction at all in global greenhouse gas emissions. It's foolish because that money would cripple the Canadian economy. We need that thriving economy to finance the research and development needed to deal with real pollution, like the thousands of new chemicals every year that poison our water, our air, and our soil. We need that money to finance research so we can stop these pollutions. We don't need to ship it out to countries that are just going to blow it.
Yeah, go ahead, Mr. Cormacan.
The whole thrust of our platform is richer, fairer, greener. Richer, again, we're trying to be fair with everyone, with the individual, with business, and putting the dividing the responsibility. We are talking about 1990 levels, and the Conservatives are talking about 2006 levels. You can imagine where it's going to be at by the year 2020. We're talking about 50% reduction by 2020. They're talking about 20% reduction by, is it that time? Or maybe 2050. So it's the opposite, almost 2 hours. We will be in real deep trouble, especially if you consider that only a month ago in Beijing, they had to stop 90% of the traffic traveling the city. Otherwise, people were going to choke.
Okay, Mr. Kasim.
Well, if we're trying to meet some of the targets that have been bannered about, we'd have to reduce most of the traffic in this country as well. So I think a balanced approach, meaningful approach, an approach that has absolute reductions, 150 megatons by 2020. I want to clarify, I talked earlier about the target of reducing emissions in the oil sands. By 2012, they have to implement this carbon capture and storage system. That's the research is being done. By 2012, no new dirty coal plants started. We've got the environment is clean air, clean land, clean water. To my mind, we've been cleaning up some of the lakes in this country that need work. We've invested in countering pollution in national parks. We have $225 million to acquire and preserve ecologically sensitive areas. And the Prime Minister has set aside parts of Canada already for that. So it goes on and gets stiffer penalties for environmental crimes. It's all a package, but something has to be done. In the time, in all due respect to Mr. Cormack, and in the time that your government was in place, our greenhouse gases continued to go up 37% over that period of time. You have to start, and you have to start now and work forward.
Do you want to go back on that? Otherwise, I'll give the floor to Mr. Sandilands.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
Well, in the 2.5 years that your government, Mr. Casson, has been in place, nothing has happened. So you had Rona Ambrose, who brought in a joke of a Clean Air Act that the NDP, Nathan Cullen, rewrote for you. And that passed Parliament too, but because it received support mostly from opposition parties, it was not taken to the Governor General for ratification. Our plan will not ruin jobs. The world is going to a kind of world where we need to change the way we do things. The electric car, which I heard just a couple of days ago on the news, is finally got approval, which was being sold into the United States, and they were happy with it there. This is one example. We will be driving electric cars. We could have an industry in Canada that builds electric cars. We could be a world leader. Unfortunately, foot-dragging by the Liberals and now by the Conservatives have meant that we're playing catch-up with the world on the new kind of economy that the world will be faced with in the future.
Yeah, Mr. Casson.
Well, this is about the best debate format we've been involved in, and this is our sixth or seventh one, so this is good.
Good. Well, I'm trying to encourage you all to go at each other. I don't want to be saying anything,
but when we
so look at each other and jump in.
When we can't go at each other, we're coming after you, so just...
Okay.
But exactly what I'm saying, the smog we see in cities is not CO2. Cleaning up the environment has more to do with greenhouse gases, and that's where your clean land, cleaning up the brown fields that exist in this country for many reasons, industry, national defense sites, the dew line that used to exist in the north, all of that has to be done and hasn't been, and so there's progress being made in all of these fields. The issue of water...
So why are you giving $50 billion tax cuts to corporations and not spending some of that money to do these things?
Well, the issue is this, that we're putting limits on these industries, and if they don't meet those limits, and their fines will be heavy, and that money will go for development. We've got $255 million in the fund right now for car manufacturers to create cleaner burning engines.
And the new eco, the car where people buy a hybrid motor for like a Prius or something like that, is canceled at the end of 2008.
We found that the cost of operating that program for the uptake, and Canadians should have jumped on that. Many did. Some got cut off, and I certainly heard from them. But exactly, I agree. If we put programs in place that Canadians will get engaged in, that's great. One thing I think all of our government, my government and Mr. McCormick's government, have failed to do is engage Canadians at the grassroots level. If we taught each other, our children taught us how to recycle, let's teach ourselves how to be good stewards of the environment. And that's to have government implement these things.
I just mentioned earlier in my opening statement that we had consulted with Canadians. I've done some of that myself. I passed the information on to Ottawa, and I expect the committees and various others to be dealing with all of that, and I'm sure that some of that went into the making of our platform. We are trying to encourage business. The whole trust, as I said, is cut taxes, and that's what the economic experts seem to tell us now too. If you read the papers and the news over recent days, it's lauding our plan. It's helping. It's meant to encourage more economic activity, and it's giving tax cuts to Canadians that are worried about their jobs, about their home mortgage, or whatever. This will be the greatest thing, as far as I can see, since it's actually the second industrial revolution is what I would call.
Okay, we're going to move on now. I think we sort of strayed a little bit off topic, but I think it was a good go-round anyway. Next questioner, please, and a single question.
Thank you very much. I was just wondering how many houses and how many people are going to suffer when the cap-and-trade tax comes in, or the green shaft comes in, and how much it's going to cost every citizen. And I refer to the Liberal government, their representative, when NEP came in. and how it destroyed all the houses, people that owned houses, owned mortgages, owned small businesses, owned trucking companies, owned oil services businesses that went down the tube. But there was no liberal guy stood up there and say, we will pay your mortgage or we will help you out. But how much is your cap and trade and your green shift going to cost the taxpayers or the citizens of this country?
Okay, to whom is the question directed?
To the Liberals and NDP. They're the ones that got the cap and trade and the green shift.
Okay. Mr. Cormican.
Well, the Green Shift will return money to people in their pocket. The average person will get between $225 and $250 a year. It's very easy. You can go in on liberal.ca or the greenshift.ca, not Green Shaft, as you like to portray it. We also have a multi-billion dollar fund, or million-dollar fund proposed for return of costs to businesses to green up. So it's really getting money moving around, and especially at this time when we look at what happened over the past couple of the past week with the banks, everything is slowing up. Someone read the papers today, Rick did there, and he even admits that it's even worse than what I saw at the papers yesterday and the day before. So we have been lauded by people like Mark Jacquard and David Suzuki, even the conservative think tanks.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Cormican. Mr. Sandilands, 1 minute on that question, please.
Mr. Eichel, have you been to Sudbury lately? Have you been to Sudbury lately or ever? Have you been to Sudbury, Ontario lately?
I've seen Sudbury. I've seen all the cities here in Saskatchewan.
Okay, so Sudbury used to have a landscape that was actually referred to as a moonscape because of the acid rain that fell there from the toxic fumes spewing out from INCO. Actually, it was Brian Mulroney's government that said, fix this problem. And what they did was a cap-and-trade system. And when they put it in, they said jobs will be lost, companies will shut down, people will move out. Who's going to help them? Well, it actually worked, and Sudbury is now quite green. This is the plan that we're proposing. It's a cap and trade system that has worked. Look at the salaries that these people earn in these companies, Exxon, Syncrude, and so on. They can afford to pay the cap. So this is where the money from. We believe that a carbon tax will inadvertently or inordinately affect poorer people, and we can take the money from a cap and trade system and build alternatives for people to have a low carbon lifestyle. And
thank you, Mr. Sandilands. Yeah, Mr. Kapp.
Well, your top executive at a company might be making $1 million a year. If you cut him to $100,000, that's only $900,000 that's going to go towards the environment. Most of the people working at that company, they don't make enough to really give up very much. But the carbon tax that's proposed, it's just going to ripple all the way along the food line. The farmer's going to have to pay the carbon tax for the fuel and the feed he needs and the fertilizer. The plant that brings the food into the factory for processing is going to have to pay carbon tax on the fuel and the trucks to get the food in there. It's going to ripple all the way down the line. Everybody's going to add their carbon cost to the price. It's going to get to the home, and we're going to be stuck with the bill, and the rebate system will be nowhere near enough. People will stop buying as much. It'll cause the economy to go into a downward spiral as people cut back on their purchasing, cut back on economic activity.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Kasson.
Well, I think the Green Shift plan at this point in our history is a risky move at best. To impose a new tax on all Canadians, and this is what it would do for the reasons that Mr. Kapp has indicated, because the price of everything will go up. If you put a tax on the fuel at a cost to move things around this big white country of ours, and you put a tax on the home heating, whether it's oil or gas, to heat our homes during the winter, we have no choice. We have to do these things. And we've implemented a 2 cent reduction in the cost of diesel fuel by cutting the excise tax in half. That compared to what the green shift plan would do, the price of diesel fuel is 8 to 10 cents a liter. And if you talk to a farmer or a truck driver or somebody involved in the industry that's delivering goods or growing food, that is a huge tax increase. And this green shift plan, in my mind, at this point in time, is very, very dangerous. Increasing taxes at a time when we need to keep taxes low and to keep Canadians' businesses productive is a very, very risky thing to do.
Okay. I would like to move on. I see a long line up there, but I'm going to give you 20 seconds to come back on that, and then we'll move on to the next question.
Just to touch on the issue of cap and trade on an international level is years away, so it would be no good to us. The money will come back. As I said earlier, the average person will get $225 to $250 per year per individual.
Okay, thank you very much.
Do I get a chance to?
We'll move on to the next question, please. We'll come back to that one if we can. We've got Afghanistan to come back to and the green shift.
This is a question for Rick Casson. Rick, the NDP tells us that you've got $50 billion you're giving away. I'd like to know where you found the $50 billion. And also, since none of it seems to be coming to me, I'd like to know who you're giving it to.
Thank you. You have 2 minutes, Mr. Casson, on that.
Well, don't hold your breath. Well, what the NDP is saying is they're going to cancel the reductions we're proposing for the corporations and industry. We feel in order to be protected, productive in this country, we have to create a climate where industry can succeed so Canadians can succeed. Industry creates jobs. It's as simple as that. And a successful industry will do that. For them to say that they're going to cancel this tax cut, for the Liberals to say they're going to increase in taxes on the green shift, I think both those moves at this point in time are very, very poor decisions to move that way. I think, and of course being a conservative, this is what I believe in, that a healthy economy, a healthy business sector, a healthy industries create the atmosphere where we can worry about these other things. Why has the economy displaced environment and Medicare as the number one concern? When we're all concerned about jobs and paying the bills at the end of the month, all these other things fall off. In order for us to address the issues of the environment, the issues of Medicare, all the issues that we face of growing, trying to feed a growing family, we need a healthy economy to do that. And by raising taxes is not the way to do that.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Sandilands.
In the fall of 2006, the Harper government canceled the income trust program because they felt revenue was bleeding away. Let me give you an example of how much revenue is bleeding away. In 1998, pre-tax corporate profits in Canada were $86.1 billion. After-tax was $55 billion. In the second quarter of 2008, this year, pre-tax corporate profits in Canada were $227 billion annualized. That's an increase of 164%. After-tax profits increased to $163.2 billion, which is an increase of 194%. 194% increase. The corporate tax rate has gone from, in 1970, 41.5% to proposed by the Liberal Conservative bill, down to 15%. Anybody in this room pay tax at the rate of 15% who has a decent income. That's where the money comes. Art, I'm afraid you're not in that league. That's why you're not making it, and that's why you're not in this paper.
Mr. Kaplan.
Well, should we realize that corporations don't pay tax? It doesn't matter if you were to tax them 50% on their income. They don't pay the taxes. They just pass it on to us in the form of higher prices.
What do they do with their profits? They build mansions in Bermuda.
Yes.
And buy Ferraris for their staff.
But if you increase the taxes, they'll increase the prices to make sure the same profit. If they're making, let's say, $1 million and you tax 200%, tax out at 20%, they're going to raise their prices so it's still $1 million. I mean, they're still going to make the same profit. It's just that it'll come out of a larger pool. It'll be 20% out of a larger figure. And they'll still make the same profit. what we need to do is get our jobs back into Canada. We're selling our, sending our jobs into foreign countries by buying their slave labor-made goods. You go down the aisles of Walmart, everything made in China, made in China, made in China. I am sick and tired of supporting a country that abuses its own people.
Yeah, Mr. Stolten.
I heard some criticisms there only a few weeks ago when our Prime Minister didn't attend the Olympic Games. So we need to reach out, and they are, whether we like it or not, huge economies. A billion people each is my understanding between, you know, both the China and India. So we need to keep on the good side. We also, there's a trade-off, there's trading back and forth. So I wouldn't worry as much about that as making sure that people have the wherewithal to buy the goods that they need. And that's what our plan hopes to do. For the economic record, I would ask, why would anyone think that the Conservatives are best equipped to manage the economy when the Liberals left office in 2006? Canada's economy was the strongest in the G8. I heard Rick mentioning earlier, saying that it was still good. Well, he's taken that out of context. It's actually the lowest in the G7 right now, is what I saw recently. We all know that the first two quarters were 0.6% the first 2 months, and 0.2% growth. That is bordering on zero.
Well, sorry.
Yeah, Mr. Casson was going to cut in there.
Well, no, I wasn't. I was waiting for him to finish. But I must say that in 13 years, the Liberal government did not sign one trade agreement. Since we've taken over government, we've gone out into the world to engage other countries to try to find different homes for our products. We have ourselves so tied to the United States, particularly if we look at the BSE crisis. When they closed that border, man, it all hell broke loose up here, because we had our most of our product going to one destination. We have got to do all we can to find other markets for our goods, and whether it's Europe or Russia or the Middle East, China, whatever, we need to find these homes and make fair trade deals where our producers are not put at a disadvantage. But to say that that we haven't been reaching out and that you were, I think it's the other way around, because the proof is that in 13 years you didn't go out and try to create more markets for our products, and that is critical to a country that exports almost everything it makes.
Yeah, Mr. Kapp.
Well, you can try to make friends with China, but we've learned by experience that when you cozy up to dictatorships, they think they're doing okay. You have to put pressure on them, and economic pressure is one method we have of facing China. We can say, look, your goods are not going to come into our country unless our trade commissioner is satisfied that there's no slave labor involved in the making of it. You treat your workers the way we treat ours, and your goods are welcome. If you're trying to undercut us with slave labor, we don't want your goods here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Mr. Kapp, if we don't talk to people, how can we do any dealings with them?
We tried talking with South Africa. It didn't work. So we said, okay, we're going to put sanctions on you. You're going to start paying attention to your own people, your black majority population. We did the same with Rhodesia, Zimbabwe.
Okay, thanks, everyone. We're going to move on now to the next questioner, who is patiently waiting there at the mic. So you have the mic. One question, please.
First of all, thank you for holding this. I really appreciate it. Decades ago, the NDP gave us a healthcare system where I don't have to worry about if I can afford to go visit a doctor. In the last two decades, both the Liberal parties and Conservative parties have failed to protect the Canadian people's health by eliminating federal food inspectors, resulting in the recent listeriosis crisis, which caused deaths of Canadian people. My question is to Mark, what will the NDP do to protect the Canadian people in matters of health and security?
Thank you.
Yes, the listeriosis crisis certainly brings home the idea of conservative and actually instigated by the Liberals cutbacks in food inspections. So the news that was just released yesterday or even today was that the food inspectors were saying that the companies didn't have to report a listeriosis of infection until they submitted their written reports to the food inspectors on a weekly or monthly basis. And that needs to change, and we will change it. We'll get more food inspectors in so that the inspection is done by independent agencies. And inspectors need to be coming unannounced. Placing an inspector in a facility develops a relationship and perhaps intimidation so that they aren't able to inspect as well. We need more inspectors, we need better inspectors, and that's what we'll be doing.
Thank you. Anyone else on that? Mr. Kasson.
No, and that's a very fair question, and this listeriosis outbreak is a scary thing, and of course the Prime Minister has asked that a panel look into what happened here and make some recommendations, and I'm going to be keenly interested, because I've been made aware of some issues to deal with inspections in different aspects of our industries in Canada. This whole issue of Made in Canada labeling, where somebody can bring in a product from outside of Canada and put a label on it and package it or repackage it, and it can be called Made in Canada. I totally disagree with that. We're ending up with some awful stuff in here. If we need more, we've already put some money in place for 200 more inspectors. Is that enough? I don't know. But I think this, whatever comes out of this investigation, will help guide us in the future. But I'll tell you one thing. That maple leaf plant in wherever it is in Toronto is going to be pretty darn clean. Maple leaf cannot go through this again. And to their credit, they were meeting the standards that were given to them. And so the standards weren't good enough. The inspections weren't good enough. So let's let this process go through, and let's find out where the problems were. If it's product, if it's process, if it's inspectors, whatever it is, if it's resources. Let's find that out and let's fix the problem. This listeriosis, I find out, is everywhere. It's in the ground, it's in the food that the animals eat, it's everywhere. I didn't know that. And we learn a lot through disaster, but hopefully this review will give us some guidelines as to how to make things better.
Mr. Cormacan.
Just a slight correction there. It was actually a Liberal government that gave Canada Medicare. Tommy Douglas gave it to Saskatchewan.
Only under duress from Tommy Douglas holding the ballot.
Doesn't matter. The Liberal government brought it in across Canada. So, just not a correct
typical Liberal.
Tommy Douglas was picked as the greatest Canadian, was he not? Over Don Cherry. Come on 7-6.
That was a minority government. The NDP or the CCF, whichever it was, in the day it was done, they put pressure on the Liberals, and that's how it came about.
Now, with respect to the listeriosis or any health-related, especially plant, and I'm sure Peter Green there would agree with that. He, in the business he was in, all those plants have their own safety personnel, and all the overall standards, country standards or whatever, do is a kind of a double check on that. Am I right, Peter? Yep. So what was done, rightly or wrongly, was that they were giving more responsibility to the plants. But again, it was a very simple thing, yet a very costly and deadly thing. I guess it was part of the machinery, and they thought everything in the garden was beautiful, but it was all building up there, and I guess they have rectified it. And I guess Mr. McCain.
Not Palin either. Wasn't Palin either.
No. But Mr. McCain, I think, did a super job on jumping on it right away and admitting that there was a problem and going to it. So hopefully we'll have safer food in the future. We Liberals have committed to giving more money to help increase the number of inspectors.
Okay, fine. Thanks very much. Let's move on to the next question. Your question, please, madam.
Hi. I hope this one doesn't get me lynched on my way up to the car.
Recently, the United Nations described transgender people as the most discriminated minority on the planet. 2008 has been a violent year for transgender people worldwide. Discrimination takes place on a daily basis in housing, medical care, and employment. Currently, under Canadian law, there are no real protections for transgender people. What, if anything, will you do to end the violence and discrimination? And this is to all poor people.
I'll only get 30 seconds on it then. Okay, who wants to go first on that? Mr. Sandilands.
There's nothing in our exact platform on this issue. However, our general party policy, which is much thicker, does have policy standing up for the rights of gay, lesbian, and transgendered individuals. In the Alberta NDP, there is a LGBT caucus for people to have an influence on party policy. So yes, we understand that there are many kinds of human conditions, and we shouldn't be judges of people because they're different from us. They all have rights, and we stand for them.
Thank you. Mr. Colmican.
Our policy is very similar. We abhor any discrimination, and I'm sure we'll be still all working at it because times change, issues change somewhat, and when people are under stress and duress, that's when they start to fight back.
Please finish your sentence.
I think it's well known that we Liberals have been very supportive, very inclusive of all people, regardless of gender.
Thank you. Mr. Casson.
Well, in 30 seconds, just to say that our get tough on crime policies just means that all Canadians deserve the right to be protected, and protecting the citizens of a country is the first order of any government.
Thank you. Mr. Capp.
Well, the Christian Heritage Party does not believe that any person should be discriminated against for things they legitimately need: housing, employment, commercial services. We don't draw any sexual distinctions. We simply say that every person must be served fairly, and we're not going to discriminate in favor of any sexual group either.
Okay, thanks very much. Next question, please.
The PSAC believes women's equality needs to be a priority. On average, women still earn less than men, regardless of their occupation.
Could you speak into the mic, please? We can't get your question.
Okay. There we are. The PSAC believes women's equality needs to be a priority. On average, women still earn less than men, regardless of their occupation. For Aboriginal and racial visible women, the wage gap is even wider. And pay discrimination continues to take tolls when women retire. The ACC has had to fight, and often for decades, to force employers to implement pay equity for work of equal value. The complaint-based systems is not working. We need a proactive federal pay equity law, as recommended by the Pay Equity Task Force in 2004. What will you and your party do to adopt a new proactive federal pay equity law? And this is probably for whoever's going to win the federal election.
Okay, Mr. Capp, do you want to address that one? Dealing with discrimination of women's wages. And if not, Mr. Casson, I'll give you the floor.
Well, thanks for that question. And of course, equal pay for work of equal value is something I personally believe in, because my wife worked for many, many years, and I always thought she was highly underpaid for everything she went through. But that was the way it was at that time. So I do support this, but I must say I do not know if it's in our platform or in our policies. I have not got it on my mind at the moment, but I'll certainly get that answer for you in very short order. I know at the present time through the Vic Tays is the minister, Treasury Board. I know that the Treasury Board is in the middle of dozens of negotiations with federal civil servants, and they need to be taken care of. I understand when an election is called, all negotiations are on hold for 3 or 4 months. It's very distressing to some people, including members of my family that work out at the research station. But certainly, if a person's doing the same job, and they should be getting the same pay. There's just no question in my mind about that.
Thanks very much, Mr. Colmican.
I totally agree with Mr. Casson there. Same job, same pay it should be. However, I would point out that our leader, Mr. Dion, was the only one that set a target to involve women in politics, and we reached our target of some 30%, even in Alberta. We reached that. It's 40% of women overall were in the running for candidatures in all the 383 ridings or whatever it is here.
Thank you, Mr. Sandilands.
41% of the NDP caucus is women. The NDP would reopen regional status of women offices and strengthen their mandate. It would properly fund Status of Women Canada, reinvesting in women's programs who had their funding cut by the Harper government. We would support Stephen Lewis's call for international action on women's equality. We would work for the creation of a UN Women's Equality Agency. We would empower Status of Women Canada and other appropriate federal agencies to work to implement the recommendations of the report on Canada by the UN Committee on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. We have a number of programs to help stop violence against women and a number of programs to improve fairness for women at work, such as reintroduce a minimum wage, increase access to employment insurance for women, and improve parental and maternity benefits, and institute a national child care program, including $400 a month for every family with a child under 18, non-taxable.
Thank you, Mr. Kapp.
The Christian Heritage Party position is that we support the principle of equal pay for equal work. We also believe that pay equity should not be a matter for government interference, but an issue to be resolved through collective bargaining if inequalities exist. Private companies should not be compelled to pay wages according to formulas just determined by others.
Thanks very much. Okay, let's move on to the next question.
Before I ask my question, I would just like to say something involving it. My question is about nuclear power, but not really about the whole thing. There are some nuclear power plants being built in Alberta right now. They won't be done for about 12 years. And when they are done, we'll be locked into sending power into the States through NAFTA. But also involving the old nuclear power plants, at what point does your party decide that a nuclear power plant is too old and must be shut down, since the risk for a nuclear meltdown increases with the age of a nuclear power plant generally? Also, for nuclear power plants being shut down, what about the use of new technologies such as enhanced geothermal energy, which is when they drill through the bedrock to get heat from the earth to power a generator?
Okay, thanks for that. So the question relates to nuclear safety and how long after a reactor has been up is it considered unsafe? And aren't there any alternatives, safe alternatives? Yes, Mr. Kapp.
Well, I'm not an expert in nuclear plants. I don't know if any of the candidates are, but nuclear power is something that we have to deal with, and we have to find ways of decommissioning these plants. We need to find a safe place to store it. We can't leave it on the surface forever. There are places in the Canadian Shield, the deep bedrock, where it could be stored, but we shouldn't make that an open excuse to just keep on building these plants recklessly. We're going to need that storage just to store what we've already built. And we need to restrain ourselves until nuclear fusion, which is far safer, becomes available.
And Mr. Kasson, do you have a comment on that?
Thanks. Yeah, I don't know what the shelf life or the working life of a power plant is, nuclear power plant, but I do know that a few years ago an in-depth study was done on what to do with the waste, and as Mr. Kapp indicated, it was called the Seaborne Report, and I just forget how many. They described a hockey arena filled up to the boards with waste, and I think there was two or three hockey rinks full of nuclear waste that need to be dealt with, and right now we're not really dealing with them in any concrete manner. And the idea was to drill a big hole in the Canadian Shield and put all this stuff down there in ceramic containers. I just forget the full gambit, but it didn't sound like it was something I wanted in my backyard, that's for sure. But I know that in Ontario, the deferred maintenance on the nuclear power plants is alarming. There needs to be a lot of money spent to keep them safe and to keep them operating, and that needs to be done. If we're going to use them, then we need to protect them. And I know that we have Atomic Energy Canada Limited, and then there's a watchdog organization that watches over this, and hopefully that they're doing their job.
Okay, Mr. Kalanick.
Trevor. I think I must have been misinterpreted, because enhanced geothermal technology does not involve the burial of nuclear waste. It is a relatively new technology that generates about the same amount of power as a nuclear power plant.
Okay, we did make the point on safe alternatives as well. Thanks, Mr. Cormican.
I agree with you on that. Thank you. It was a good question. Geothermal, just like solar, is passive. It's there. It's 200-500 feet down. We can just use it. It's a matter of harnessing it. And I would venture to say much safer than trying to sequester the leftovers. I don't know if some of you are probably aware that the life of spent rods is apparently 500 years or more. So it's pretty dangerous. And you were talking there, Rick, about the that was the Bruce nuclear power plant that has, I don't know, it's, I can't remember if it's the size of a couple of football fields, storing them there. And I, as you said, I wouldn't want them in my backyard either. We've got to be very careful about what we how we do things, what we waste. And I also read on, I think it was May the 17th, there was a page in the paper, in the Globe and Mail, that showed a cesspool of garbage in the ocean 1.5 times the size of the continental USA.
That's okay.
A huge size. We need to be careful about what we're dumping.
And how long do these nuclear power plants last?
I haven't a clue about the power plants, but we all remember Chernobyl, and I know I have another friend that's in the nuclear area, and he has tried to help me understand it a bit, but he thinks they're safe. I still think they're questionable. I mean, you're creating a bomb when you put it underground. How large is that bomb? Is it going to erupt like a volcano? We need to be careful.
Mr. Sandilands.
Mr. Kapp, nuclear fusion is a pipe dream. Billions of dollars have been wasted because people think that they can get nuclear fusion and get it working. No forward, really, success has happened in the field. As for nuclear waste, it does sit in pools or hockey rink size areas, and the water has to keep circulating in those because they generate heat. There's not a lot of heat, not enough to make electricity, but there's so much heat that you have to circulate water through them to be cooled. If the power ever goes off, meltdown, China syndrome. Nuclear power is not a safe way. I just finished reading a book about Three Mile Island. I found it at a used bookstore. Fascinating. It's so complicated that they have to have regulatory agencies on regulatory agencies. And unfortunately, the Harper government hamstrung Canada's regulatory agency. There are alternatives, wind power and deep geothermal, which I think you're talking about, Julius, which drills a hole 15,000 feet or three 3.5 kilometers in the ground and takes the heat there. The rocks are 1,000 degrees there, and it can produce steam. As I mentioned earlier in one of the comments I made, there are experiments now happening. One of the dangers of that is that it's down in the area where it may trigger earthquakes. There was one that was triggered, they think, possibly in Basel, Switzerland.
Okay, but I'm going to have
there are to ways that we can generate power without nuclear.
I'm going to have to cut you off on that. If there are any more questions, this will be the last question. We do have a closing statement by the candidates to come. So, yes, sir, you have the floor.
Thank you. I have
one question, please.
I have a very concrete question, and I want very concrete answers. Governments we elect to represent our interests, the interests of the people. And right now, in Canada, since 2005, there's a transfer of lakes, pristine fishing lakes, northern beautiful lakes, out of the Fisheries Act into the Tailings Pond Act, or whatever they call it. There's two right now where metal mining companies are dumping their wastes into pure lakes, just like that, by a simple stroke of the minister's pen. There's 14 more being in application. All of you have talked about your worry about water and the environment. Do you support the dumping of mining wastes into pure lakes? Mr. Kassan, this is happening under your watch. Mr. McCormick, and this began in 2005. And will you publicly oppose this and reverse it?
Thank you. To whom is the question directed?
The question is directed to all of them.
Okay, you have 30 seconds each, starting with Mr. Kapp.
Well, the world is not something we inherit from our ancestors. It's something we borrow from our descendants. We have a responsibility to maintain it in clean condition for them. Now, what you've cited here, that sounds like a rather under-the-rug trick to transfer these lakes so it can be turned into a dump. That's precisely why we need parties of conscience in the House of Commons, like the Christian Heritage Party. We hold the government to account for these kinds of nasty business.
Thank you. Mr. Kassan.
And I'm sure you would, sir. But I do want to make light of this issue, and I'm aware of it, sir. And my commitment to you is to work to stop this. I understand that it happened, and then it's happening. And I, for the life of me, I have no idea why it needs to. I know that particularly in the oil sands, there's some technology coming forward that tailing ponds have become a thing of the past. Thank goodness. But I'm not sure what that process entails, or how many years down the road it is. But certainly, particularly in the north, I mean, you know, we've got one pristine area left. Let's not be ruining it as well.
Thank you, Mr. Cormican.
I certainly agree as well. We need to preserve our water. I think it's polluted enough from farming and everything else. We have enough scientific backing now that we should all be cautious as to how much we're doing or polluting, and let's start restoring our environment again. And I'm sorry if that occurred. I wasn't aware that it occurred in 2005. I certainly would be opposing it if I was there.
Thanks very much, Mr. Sandilands.
I would like to adopt the precautionary principle. You don't do something unless you can prove pretty certainly that it's not harmful. Unfortunately, liberal and conservative governments have followed the opposite principle. Let's do something unless we can prove that it is harmful. Let's go ahead with it unless somebody can prove that we're causing a problem. And the lack of regulation under liberal and conservative governments has led in Canada to many, many tailings ponds and the pollution of many pristine lakes.
And what would the NDP do about it?
We would regulate properly.
Thank you. Okay, so we've come to the end of our question period, and the last item on the agenda are closing statements by the candidates. And in sending them the guidelines on this, we're conscious of the fact that the persuasive powers of a member of parliament are particularly important. So we do want them to try and persuade you to vote for them. Why would you vote for them if they can't persuade you to do that? So we're going to start, as we started at the beginning, with Jeffrey Kapp of the Christian Heritage Party for his closing statement.
Thank you. Christian Heritage Party views government as responsible to the people to obey the same moral laws. We shouldn't be stealing from you. We shouldn't be lying to you. That's the approach the Christian Heritage Party takes, and that is how we will approach it in the House of Commons. If you elect a Christian Heritage Party member of Parliament, we will be there to keep an eye to make sure that your money is being properly spent. The money is still yours. They may have taxed it from you, but it's still your money. And whatever they spend it on, that's yours as well, and the government is responsible to you for how they use it. And we follow that principle, and if you elect me as your member of Parliament, that is what I will do in the House of Commons. I will respect that. That's yours, and they had better be getting value for your money.
Thanks very much. The next speaker is Mr. Cormican.
Thank you again for coming out tonight. I'm here because I truly believe that I am the best person to represent you. Oh, sorry.
Residents of the riding are concerned about many things. The lack of action. They want funding for arts and culture, for needs like the Bridge Centennial Project, which was turned down by Mr. Casson's government. And they have concerns about the abuse of parliamentary mail-out privileges. I will use the free mailing privilege to keep you informed, not to send your partisan mail at public expense. Liberals are renewed and reinvigorated. We have learned from the past, changed leadership to a man of integrity and honor, and we have a dynamic team ready to go. Working together with your help, we will build and achieve a richer, fairer, greener Canada. My promise is I will be strong and a positive voice in Ottawa. Your voice will count. I'm strongly committed. Given the government record over recent...
Please finish.
Think about it. Who is it that made all the gaps over the past month? Not the Liberals. And the Conservatives have yet not released any plan. All they've done is just piecemeal huge promises here and there that have cost us billions.
Thank you, Mr. Cormican. Mr. Casson.
Well, thank you very much, and I guess in order to convince these people assembled tonight to vote for me, I have the privilege of serving you for the last 11 and a half years, and believe me, it is. It's a privilege and a responsibility that I don't take lightly. I will continue, if you so favor me with your vote, to continue that I will make that vow to you. I'll continue to do the best I can. This is a time when we as Canadians, I believe, have to make a very, very calculated and informed decision. In my mind, the Conservative government under Stephen Harper is the best government to lead us ahead in the years coming. I believe that. I believe that the other parties, particularly the NDP and the Liberals, have some risky plans here that could very much damage our economy at a time when we have to do everything we can to keep that economy strong. So my commitment is to you, and what you saw for the last 11 and a half years is probably what you're going to get if you choose to elect me for whatever period of time that is. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Casson. Mr. Sandilands.
Well, thank you, everybody, for coming out tonight. I see this election as a choice between doing things the way they have been done for the past 25 years, not just the past 2.5 years, but the past 25 years, or changing things. People say three issues are important in the election: the economy, healthcare, and the environment. The economy requires somebody, a party, that will do things for the economy. I'm thinking back to the 1930s when Canada had R.B. Bennett and the United States had Herbert Hoover. They took decisions that drove things further into the black pit of the Depression. The NDP came into being in the 1930s because of the lack of action of those parties at that time. We have policies for the environment, for the health care, The NDP owns health care. We gave it to Canada in spite of what the Liberals try to claim. We protect it. And for the environment, we have a plan that we think will work. On October 14th, please vote for me, NDP. Don't let them tell you it can't be done.
Thank you, Mr. Sandy Lyons. Well, that brings us to the end of our debate this evening. We hope that it's helped you decide who you're going to vote for, why you're going to vote for that person. And even if you're undecided, please come to a position before the 14th of October and go out and vote. I'd like to thank all the candidates for attending this debate. They worked jolly hard attending numerous debates, and I'd like a round of applause for the candidates, please. I'd also like to thank you, the audience. You've been a great audience, and thanks very much for turning out. I'd like to thank the library for these facilities, for putting on the coffee, and for generally being very friendly towards these debates. And last of all, we hope to see you at SACPA on Thursdays. Lolla 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 the keg. Thank you.